so much for being here today. I'm really, really excited to talk to you about kind of two topics at the same time. My talk is titled Travis Won't Accept My Packages. I promise that will become much more clear as I'm explaining the talk. So why are we here? Okay, so I have you here to talk about automated testing and then like how that kind of marries into hardware. And so there's definitely a lot you can still take away today, even if you don't do hardware, because we're going to talk a lot about testing. And of course, love. You know, JavaScript should be about love, and I'm feeling the love from all of you today. So first of all, my name again is Suze Hinton. I'm NoobCat on Twitter, pretty much everywhere else as well, like GitHub, for example. I moved to New York City in February, and I've just never felt so welcomed in my life by like a meetup community such as, you know, the Borough.js community. So I wanted to give a quick shout out to the Borough.js community, who got their tickets today at 10 o'clock in the morning. There are a couple of people here that I saw frantically like buying their tickets. Awesome. I'm bouncing next week, so if you want to see me like, you know, trying to stop people from scamming their way in, I'll be there. I'm a front-end dev at Kickstarter, so I've been there since February again. I moved here for the job, and it's really, really awesome there. We are hiring, so come and talk to me. So I sort of don't really do professional hardware. I do silly hardware. So these are Meow shoes. They just have pressure sensors in them, and they connect up with your browser via Johnny 5, and you can just sync up musical beats with them. And you can choose, you know, your instruments and things like that. Really, really fun. If you want to learn how to make them, there's a book called Make JavaScript Robotics, and I've written a chapter in that with a tutorial. I also made this bracelet called the PER. It stands for Personalized Ultimate Reassurance Response. It's a 3D printed bracelet that measures your heart rate, and if you have this really elevated heart rate for a sustained period of time, it assumes that you're having a panic attack, and it will text you a picture of a kitten just to help out a little bit. That, you know, kittens don't cure anxiety, but they do help a lot sometimes. This weird contraption was something I put together for a hackathon. It's called Print Your Own Adventure. And essentially, it's a thermal printer connected to a Raspberry Pi, and it reads your fitness data for the day, and it tries to make up a story of what it thinks that you actually did that day. And so it's supposed to support people who can't be active at all times if they have chronic illnesses. So for example, here, it predicted that at 5 o'clock you had quiet time, there wasn't a lot of activity from you, you did only 22 steps, but it's important to rest, so well done. So that was sort of my little thing. I haven't finished that yet, I should really finish it. But lately I've kind of been more excited about getting other people excited about hardware. So I stopped sort of producing things, and I wanted to sort of be more in the background helping others produce things. And so this was one of the first libraries that I wrote for other people to use. It's called OLED.js. And so this is an OLED device. If anyone's got a Fitbit, whether it's the wrist one or one that's on your hip, uses exactly the same type of screen. So they're really cool. You can make them display almost anything. It's just essentially a bunch of pixels and you're just turning them on and off. And so there wasn't really many JavaScript libraries for this. There certainly wasn't one for the robotics library, Johnny 5, so I ended up writing one. And so I'm gonna be talking a little bit about this library today to do with like testing. So what's awesome is when you put yourself up and it, you know, it's up on open source, you get pull requests, which is really cool. So I'm like really excited about that. And you know, 38 stars, as you can see here, and 15 folks, that's actually a really big deal for me. You know, a lot of my, this isn't like the next gulp, so you know, that's actually a big deal. It's a very niche piece of software. But you know, being an open source maintainer can get a little overwhelming, and every time someone pull requests you, you have to make sure that their code is gonna work, right? So you know sort of where I'm going with this. And so testing is really, really, really important, but if you're the only maintainer of a library, that kind of all falls on you, right? And so testing hardware libraries can get really complex really quickly, but you sort of follow very similar principles that you would when you're testing something on the web. And so, you know, unit tests are just often not enough. You know, you're testing every little piece of something, which is great. Unit tests are awesome, but when you think about when you're creating a website, you don't want to just test all the little pieces, you want to make sure they all, like everything plays together, right? And so, you know, that's where we talk about like integration testing. And so normally integration testing, like who writes tests here? Put your hand up if you write tests. Yes, test writers, okay. Integration testing is when you essentially make sure that a whole bunch of things line up and they actually all work really well together. And I can see Nick smiling because he does stuff for Tesla, which is a microcontroller, so lots of testing, I bet. So vigilant integration testing is super necessary for hardware because usually when you're running tests, you need to run it on the actual device. And so a lot of the time when you're running tests for the web, you're running it on the exact same machinery that your website is going to run on. So that's like pretty easy for web, but it's not very easy for hardware. And so my integration tests are putting a bunch of like random patterns, pictures, and text on the screen in a demo sequence to make sure, oh, okay, like the pixels are not out of place, we don't have a blank screen, and this is displaying correctly on all of the different size screens as well. And so I have this demo script that I run, and every 5 seconds it updates with another picture. And every time I get a pull request, that's what currently happens. And so, you know, that doesn't scale very well. That's basically it. And so if we want automated testing of this, like what can we actually do? Like, the problem is that a lot of these pull requests I've gotten have either been in the subway, or I've been in a different country, or I just haven't had any OLED screens set up. And so there's a huge delay in me merging things, and I feel really guilty about it. And you know, if anyone else is an open source maintainer here, you know my pain. It's just this constant sense of guilt. So I thought, okay, I can automate this. So like, let's just write a simulator for it. Like, let's just write an actual software version of this. That's kind of hard when you're sort of like having to basically write a computer from scratch, essentially. So you have to write an emulation. So let's have a look at just the things that you would have to do for this OLED screen if you wanted to actually simulate it fully. So we would want pixel buffer emulation, where the chip on the screen actually kind of manages that in the RAM, so we would have to do that. We'd have to do clock speed emulation, so that's, you know, like, how often is it turning over all of the bits that we're sending it? It would be I2C response emulation. I2C is the communication protocol it uses, so we need to make sure that we have some messaging coming back and forth. The busy and ready state emulation, so like, we have to be able to pretend that the screen is busy, and like, how do we handle it when it's busy? Do we wait or do we overflow it? And then there's multiplexer emulation too, which is something that I'll explain later on, but it's quite complicated. And so, okay, I could spend 2 years writing this, but you know, what's the point? It would also just be too perfect. It's actually really hard to write a simple computer on a really fast, complex computer and get all of those details right. So anyone that's worked with things like Nintendo Entertainment System emulators and stuff like that will kind of see, very hard to get it right. It's a lot of work. You know, I do this stuff in my spare time. So, you know, like, what can we do instead? So these are all the three different screen sizes that I currently support in this library. And so I thought, all right, well, I have one of each of these. And so again, like, writing a sim for each would be really difficult. And so I thought, all right, well, why don't we just do physical hardware integration? You know, why don't we just like set up the screens, and then, you know, we run like a script, and then I don't have to be there running it manually myself. Like, what would that actually look like? So who's familiar with this German man here? Yep, okay, cool. So for those that don't know, this is the logo for Travis CI. So it's a continuous integration solution. It's free for open source libraries, which is awesome. So I use Travis for a lot of my other libraries that don't necessarily require the integration testing. And it's actually pretty awesome. And it works really well for web stuff. So you can write your tests. You write essentially a YAML config file to tell it what to do. And then then you can actually connect that through to GitHub. And GitHub can let Travis know when there's new code for it to test. So it's actually this really, really nice experience. And so, you know, this is an example of a pull request that I set up. And you can see in the bottom of the screen, it says, all checks have passed. And if you can read right on the very bottom, it says, continuous integration, Travis CI, the Travis CI build passed. So what's awesome is you get this, like, really coupled relationship between your testing and like the person that's opening the pull request. They can immediately see if your test passed. So I sort of wanted to provide that experience because I think that the Travis CI, the Circle CI, and all of the other continuous integration systems do a really good job of that. The problem is, like, I can't really just package up a bunch of screens and then an Arduino and, like, send it to Travis CI in the mail and then just ask them to plug it in on the other end. First of all, I don't know where their servers are, and second of all, most of the time they're virtual machines, right? And yeah, it's just preposterous. It's not something I can do. So how do you do automated testing if these kind of services can't, like, plug in the physical stuff for you? So that was kind of like a bit of an issue for me. So, you know, this is what we all do, right? But, like, I could probably just do this in JavaScript. So I sort of want to, like, talk to you today and tell you sort of like how I set up an automated testing server. And there'll be a lot of advice there that you can kind of take even if you're not doing it for hardware. So this is a genuine use case. Like, I finally had an excuse to just write something myself, and I thought that this was a really cool experience. So, you know, this is kind of how I did it. I thought, okay, so this is the usual flow, right? Someone opens a pull request on GitHub, and the cool thing about your repositories on GitHub is if you click on the settings for that repo, you can set up a webhook, and you can check the boxes of all the different events that could happen on your repo. So I checked a couple of boxes for pull requests and pushes. So every time someone opens a pull request or, like, pushes an update to a pull request, there's a webhook that happens where I can specify a server that GitHub will actually post to, and it'll post me this giant JSON object. And the payload contains this really interesting information, such as the code that I can pull down, the location of it, the user, what pull request number it is. So that's awesome. So I thought, okay, I can use that. So if you're ever thinking about setting up your own testing server, definitely webhooks are the first place for you to begin. So the webhook hits, like, my server, which is just sitting around, and it has the hardware plugged into it, and it will fetch down the code from the pull request, it will build it, and then it will start running the tests, right? And then if the tests pass or if they fail, it will report back to GitHub and say, all right, this is kind of what happened. And then you, from that kind of point, you can decide whether or not you're going to merge the code. That seems, like, super straightforward. So, like, let me tell you sort of what I wanted to happen on the server itself, because build-in tests is way too abstract. This is kind of what I wanted it to do. So I wanted it to fetch the branch down that was actually the pull request changes. I wanted it to build it, so npm install, set up scaffolding, that kind of stuff. I then wanted it to run that demo script that I talked about with the different patterns on the screen. And then I thought, well, if I'm not around to see it happen, like, you know, how do I know that it's actually, like, run correctly? So I thought, all right, well, I can get a webcam, and I can, like, take some photos of every step, right? So I thought, all right, this might actually work. And then I wanted to sort of, like, take all of those photos that it took at every stage, so there's 6 screens total, and I want to composite that into just, like, one giant image. And then I wanted to take that image, and then that has to be, like, uploaded to the internet somewhere so that GitHub knows where it is. And then finally, it does a GitHub comment, because, you know, I'm not, like, fancy enough to have, like, a real integration. GitHub kind of doesn't really offer that for, like, little people like me. So I wanted it to, like, comment on the pull request with that image so that the person who wrote the pull request and myself can see, okay, like, did it disturb anything? Like, did your code change something to do with the way the pixels are run, or did you maybe accidentally delete a line where we're not setting up a hardware pin correctly at initialization? And every screen is, like, blank in the photos. So that's essentially sort of what I wanted to do. And so you can probably see there's some aspects of, like, web that you can probably take from this and just substitute your own steps in. So I thought, this can't be that hard, right? There's only, like, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 7 steps. This will be fine. So let me talk to you about, like, the physical step first, right? So I actually have this here with me today. So unfortunately, it's not actually running because it's not magical, it needs cables. But if you wanted to, like, talk to me and, like, have a look at this later on up close, I have it here with me. This is my OLED test rig, and it was actually really fun to set up. So normally when I test stuff manually, I just plug in a screen, run the demo, and then I disconnect, and then I plug in the next screen, and then I run the demo, and I disconnect. It's actually really nice to have them all in, like, one location. The main reason why I didn't have them all on the one location until recently is, so hardware companies don't really talk to each other when they're producing these things. And so these screens run on the I2C protocol, and that's a communication protocol. And they kind of have their own phone numbers, right? So there's like every single screen has its own phone number in the form of like a byte value from 0 to 255. So you would expect that like every single different screen would have a different address, right? Yeah, that would be very wishful thinking. So I think in the end I had like four screens that I was testing at one point, and like there was a pair that had the same phone number, and then the other pair had the same phone number as each other as well. And so I can't send the same information to like two devices at the same time because they have different specs, they have different screen sizes, and then I have different like hardware affordances that I make for each one. And so in the end, the device that you see on the left at the top is a multiplexer, and so that allows you to kind of like hot swap between them if they have the same phone number, which is really awesome. And then the device on the right that's kind of joined onto the end of it, that's actually the Arduino that's running the script for us, which is awesome. So that's sort of like a very brief overview into like just the relief that I felt now that I had every single device working at the same time. So that was already a huge improvement. The next thing I needed was, I was like, well, how do I sort of set it up so that there's this kind of consistent experience where the webcam is always in the same spot and it's kind of like hooked up and it's just this kind of unit that's sitting by itself. So I have a 3D printer at home and it's like one of the best things. Like I know Christmas is coming up, think about buying one for yourself because they're awesome. I ended up modeling kind of this tray and you can see kind of the inset where like the breadboard would sit. And then I have this sort of like weird sort of pole at the back. And so that's kind of the beginning of like a ball and socket joint arm that can hold the webcam so that I can position it. So I pretty much modeled that in about 20 minutes in Tinkercad. I'm seriously in love with Tinkercad. I used to use Blender all the time, but Tinkercad allows you to do really fast, rapid prototyping, so I definitely recommend checking it out. It's just a web browser-based modeling program. And this is sort of the finished result. So you've got your webcam, and you've got like this flexible arm, so I printed all of the ball and socket joints separately, and I found that ball and socket joint model on Thingiverse, which is an awesome site where everybody uploads models for people to share. And this is sort of what it ended up looking like. And so that's pretty sane. And it's a pretty small footprint, so I can set that up anywhere I want, really, and just have it running like in my study or just like on top of the fridge or like, you know, wherever I want to put that. So that actually was sort of, I guess, the shortest part of actually trying to put all of this together. But I still wanted to kind of let you in on how you set these kind of things up. So from there, I sort of thought, all right, well, where is this going to be plugged into? And so I ended up using a Raspberry Pi 2, again, because it has a really small footprint. It's kind of low risk. I don't do my everyday computing on it, so if I get this really nasty hacker that just wants to blow up my machine with a pull request, I'm working on the security, by the way. So if somebody just decides to be like really nasty, like really what I've lost is a Raspberry Pi, or I just have to like put another SD card in and like, you know, run a fresh install of the operating system. So I decided to use a Raspberry Pi, and it actually just uses the USB connections to an Arduino. My library's not compatible out of the box with the Raspberry Pi, so I didn't have to worry about mucking around with the GPIO. So that's sort of how I did it. It just has like a Wi-Fi dongle in it, and it's plugged into the webcam and the Arduino, and it just sits there listening for that GitHub webhook. Like, I'm actually running a Node.js server on the Raspberry Pi, so that's sort of how we're going to bleed into the software stuff. So on the software side, I used a few NPM modules. It's not all of them, but they're the main ones. I used Rudvag's GitHub webhook handler. It's essentially middleware for like any Node.js server you set up. So it will work with Happy, it will work with Express, it'll work with just HTTP. I believe I just use HTTP. I use SimpleGit just because it kind of just wraps all of the Git commands in a bunch of child processes and runs them for you and just gives you like a really nice callback pattern. So you could actually just run your Git commands when it fetches down the code just from a simple child process if you really wanted to. I use Node Imager, like so easy, like out of the box. You put your, I think I'm just uploading it anonymously, so I think I barely have any user details that I entered in there, but that was really easy too. So once it's actually, you know, done the image magic thing and it's gone all the way through, that's where it uploads it to Imager. So if you go on the Imager public feed, sometimes you might see an OLED screen composite. I just couldn't be bothered to tell you what my user stuff. Rick Waldron's Joint 5 is awesome. That's actually what my OLED screen kind of runs on. Like, it runs within that framework. So obviously I installed that. And then my own module is kind of what's being tested. So, you know, I have to have that installed, and that's kind of what gets pulled down every time. So that's a very, very high level overview of kind of the pieces that I was using. But I'm going to be open sourcing this library super, super soon. So I sort of wanted to just give people a chance to dig into the code instead. Please come and see me if you want more details on how I set this up. But essentially, it's a Node.js server that listens for a webhook, and then it just checks out the code on Git and does all of that whole crazy workflow that it wanted. So that took a lot of time. There's a lot of intricate details around that. And so for the webcam side of things, I actually just ended up using FS webcam, and I called that command in a child process every time using my Node server. And Graphics Magic was what I used, and I used like a Node module like wrapper on that in order to take every single image from the webcam and stitch it all together into one big image. So a lot of moving pieces, but it actually comes together in a pretty straightforward way. So I'm sure you're all thinking, like, just like, come on, get on with it. Like, did it actually work? So here is actually the manage the webhook. So I just wanted to quickly show you. This is the settings that I can go into. I can put in the URL that I want it to post to, accept it as JSON, and you can just tick the box. So I have just pull requests ticked right now, which is pretty cool. And you can actually just keep redelivering the same one as you're testing, which is super, super useful, which I love. So it's a very quick, breezy intro to that. But let's have a look. All right, so I kind of opened this like mock pull request, but it actually is a feature that's going to be coming into OLED.js really soon. And although I had a bit of a hardware issue right when I was capturing it, you can see that it's the same image. Well, it displays the cat the first time, but it doesn't move on to each next test pattern. You can see here how I was trying to put this together. And so if I click on this image and go to the next tab, it's just one big image, so it's all composited into one. So what can we tell from this picture immediately? Like, we can tell that something is wrong, right? There's like a little tiny screen on the right, like I didn't quite get the webcam lined up. You can see that that's showing snow, you know, and so that's like a very common pattern for like when your TV's not tuned. OLED screens do the same thing when you run through the boot up sequence, and so something is either wrong with my hardware or something that I changed in the code is actually breaking that screen. And so this is a really, really excellent example of when things go wrong. Unfortunately, I didn't have time to kind of hook it all back up again last night to get the actual picture of the full running sequence together, but you should see that operating on my repo really, really soon. And if you want to make just like tiny little README changes to like test it out when it's live, feel free to do that. I just want to see whether it's going to keep going reliably. So that was pretty cool. I was very, very excited when I kind of saw myself comment on something, but I didn't actually make the comment myself. So that actually comes in automatically, and it's really creepy, and I'm like, oh, that's kind of cool. And I also have a message for when it fails, too. It just has a very simple sentence saying that it failed to run. So that at least makes me know that, okay, I may have to go and manually test it, or I just need to manually kick off the build again. So that was pretty cool. Like, that was a really amazing moment for me when that all kind of like that whole crazy tool chain sort of worked. So like, what are the next steps? Like, clearly that's not like running super perfectly, and it's actually like an MVP. I want some more features. And some of you might already be thinking of like some of these features. So I want to clean up the code just so that people can understand it. I want to write some documentation so if someone wanted to set up something as mental as this in the future, they could. And the biggest reason why I actually put this together was I wanted to do pixel dipping. So let's say you take a photo of all of the screens. What if you also had a photo that had all the successfully run screens? And then what if you could actually like run like a dipping algorithm on that to figure out whether or not all of the pixels are exactly where they should be? So I need to be working with the focus, the lighting, all of those kind of things for the screen first in order to get that picture as clear as possible. But I really think that that could be a really cool thing that we could do. So people don't even need to look on the pull request to see whether or not the pixels are all in the right place, right? Like, we can have an algorithm that can tell more or less whether it's cool. So I thought that would be an excellent thing for me to pursue next. I think it would be a cool challenge. So the reason why I talked to you all about this today is this is a very niche thing to do, right? It's just for one library, and it seems very single use, and it's a lot of effort. But I wanted to see if I could do it, and I wanted to try and like set an example for other people who want to come in and do this. I'm a member of the Node.js Hardware Working Group, and right now we're trying to figure out how we can test all of our hardware libraries in an automated way. So this was almost like a prototype of that. So no matter how small it is, just like do a thing. If you're thinking of doing a thing, just do the thing. It's a lot of fun. It's okay to be niche, you know. If no one else is going to use it, if it's not going to be the next gulp, who cares? And success is different for everyone, right? Like 38 stars is like ridiculous for me, but even like one star is also really exciting for me. And so again, you don't have to be the next big JavaScript framework to feel that success. And so this project was like really fun for me, and I couldn't believe that I sort of got all the pieces going. So I want to inspire you all to kind of do the same, do something silly that you probably would normally not do. And fall in love with testing. Like this stuff is so awesome, and it's going to save me so much time, and everyone else is going to get their pull requests addressed a lot faster. So if you haven't already, like, fall in love with testing. It's a really awesome thing, and you feel like a wizard when you get it all working. So with that, I just want to say thank you.